May it please the court.
Certainly.
My name is Amy Lowe, and I represent William Fleming. William Fleming is poor. He has been poor throughout the pendency of this case. He is disabled with bipolar disorder and a herniated disc. Through most of his term on probation, he was making about $450 a month in disability, $675 briefly. At his guilty plea, he was sentenced to a term of probation. Alongside, as a condition of that probation, he was ordered to pay his court costs, two $46 payments to the Law Enforcement and Victims Restitution Fund, as well as to attend anger management classes, to abide by the directives of his probation officer, to have no further contact with the victim, possess no bladed instruments, and to pass a urine analysis. Mr. Fleming abided by the terms of his probation, other than the fact that he was poor.
There was a question about the amount of the charge for his incarceration. How much was that compared to the regular court costs and the victim's compensation amounts?
The regular court costs are about $275. The clerk fee is $46 per case.
Was there any discussion when he pled guilty about the fact that there would be additional court costs, and I'm putting that in quotes, of thousands of dollars?
No, Your Honor. The amount is mentioned nowhere, just the term court costs, as well as
about $3,700 or $3,800 of board fees that he ultimately was charged.
The amount is listed between $3,000 and $3,800 at different places in the record, Your Honor. Mr. Fleming ended up paying a total of roughly $1,110. At his guilty plea, if we add up the total fees assessed, including his public defender fee for $300, and then generously add in $125 for the public defender who did his probation violation, the total fees end up being roughly $736, if I did the math correctly. Instead, he was charged with $4,200. He made efforts to pay this in good faith, despite his extreme level of poverty and the fact that he is disabled. He attended vocational rehab classes and attempted to make himself employable for a job that didn't require him to use his back.
Did the trial court make a finding that he failed to implement or use good faith in making these payments?
No, and that's one place where the procedural issues in this case, pardon me, Your Honor, make the record difficult. The court takes an admission of violation 2 years before the disposition hearing. At the disposition hearing, the court relies on that earlier admission 2 years prior.
What did he admit 2 years prior?
That he had not paid his court fees yet.
Did the court inquire into or hold a hearing or take any evidence on his ability to pay?
No. However, there was an admission on Mr. Fleming's part that he had not paid at that time.
Yes, I know. But that's a different question.
And again, did the admission also include that he had not made, I forget what the magic language is, that he had made a
good faith effort
to pay?
No, and there was no inquiry into the good faith effort.
There was no hearing. The other side's going to say that he agreed each time, though, to the amount that was requested. Can you pay that? Yeah, no problem. I can pay it.
The amount isn't on the record, Your Honor. Where the state says that he agreed to $4,200 on page 24 of the transcript, it merely says court costs. And given that court costs are a set amount that is several thousand dollars lower than that, I don't think that the admission of no problem to paying court costs and the clerk fee could be taken as an admission that he would have no problem paying $4,200 total.
No figure was mentioned in that transcript.
No, Your Honor. I believe the exact section is line 8, page 24. As part of that probation, Mr. Fleming, the court is going to order you to pay your court costs and the crime victims' compensation fund, $46 for each count, and the court is going to order you to have that paid off within 3 years, okay? That doesn't mean to wait 2.5 years. I want you to start making payments immediately so you can have that paid off as soon as possible, okay? The defendant, no problem.
So is it your position, absent a trial court stating that the defendant had the ability to pay and did not make a good faith effort to pay, that he cannot have his probation revoked and be sent to prison?
Yes, with the exception that all proof can be waived. However, in this case, I think that when we look at the fact that we have this two-year gap between when the court has him admit that he has yet to pay, with no questioning and inquiry on willfulness, and the actual sending my client to prison, at which point his lawyer attempted to argue the bona fide efforts and was cut off because of the prior admission. I think that willfulness is crucial when we look at the Supreme Court case law on this issue, when we look at Bearden versus Georgia, when we look at the extraordinarily limited case law from Missouri that we see in cases like Hendricks v. Lark. In all of these, the focus is on if somebody is trying to avoid punishment and willfully not give the court what's due, or if it is because of their membership in a protected class. And although poverty isn't given strict scrutiny or anything of the like, it is a group that we look at more carefully when we're looking at due process concerns, when we're looking at equal protection concerns. Mr. Fleming pays $10 at a time when he's living on $450 a month. That's what he has to survive on. He continues to make efforts to pay. The court puts this into collections, which would have been a way to continue to collect this without sending an indigent man to prison. As he's able to make money, they were able to collect. Ironically, the court cut off its only mechanism of payment by sending him to prison, which cut off his disability payments.
Well, but the court couldn't keep him on probation any longer, could it? It was collecting through the civil debt collection, is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
That the court was going to lose jurisdiction if it didn't act.
Yes.
Okay. I was just looking at the court adopted a form to determine indigency in municipal cases last week. And I was just looking at what the court adopted. And at that point, obviously, it was not in effect. But it presumes a person is indigent if the person has household monthly income below 125% of federal poverty guidelines. For a one-person household, it's $1,237. Does he have anyone else? Do we know if he has anyone else in his household?
At the time of this case, he was living with another disabled individual, and they were both living off of disability. We do not have in the record what they were making from disability, but given that they lived in the same jurisdiction, I would not expect it to be significantly higher than what he was making. The municipal cases also provide us guidance on the notice issue in this case. Where we look at the law surrounding municipal courts, the Missouri legislature has treated jail board and court costs as separate entities when drafting statutes. This goes to indicate that even a legislator wouldn't be on notice that that is included in the term court costs.
Why were they treated the same here? Is there a basis for the trial court to include jail board as part of court costs? Or do we know on what basis the court did so?
No, we do not. The record is devoid of this. We know that the court had made a practice of it only because there is another case that came down recently from the Eastern District where the court had again tried to extract several thousand dollars from an indigent disabled defendant who was on probation. In that particular case, the Eastern District had found, and this court denied transfer, on the base that the lack of notice that the jail board bill was owed was not sufficient because it was absent during the guilty plea colloquy, as well as the conditions of probation, which is the same scene here. When we review the special conditions of probation, they also only say court costs.
I looked at that and I didn't see where this was listed. Is there any written place where in the conditions that he was given or any notice he was given?
No, Your Honor. In the written conditions of probation, what we have is the standard conditions, which don't include it other than intervention fees, which were waived in Mr. Fleming's case because he is poor and disabled. Special conditions include not possessing bladed instruments, reporting to probation within 24 hours, attending a domestic violence program, all of which he has done. We want to skip some of these because I'm about to run out of time.
Yes.
The only one that mentions payment is you shall pay court costs, crime victims compensation fund within 3 years in an amount ordered by the court and on a schedule set by the supervising probation officer. Although some ambiguity could be accounted to the in amount set by the court, adding in an entirely unrelated fee to that amount that is treated as an unrelated fee by the legislature, that's been treated as an unrelated fee by the appellate courts of Missouri, that is over treble what would have been charged otherwise, and that's if we include the public defender fee he was ordered to pay. That's not notice or due process.
The Verdon requires not just that there is a willing failure to pay, but it requires that the court has to find, and this is my recollection I'm asking, I guess, that there is a present ability to pay, that it's a two-prong, that there's a present ability to pay, and then with that present ability to pay, there's a willful failure to pay. Is there anything in the record other than his statement to the court, which I believe is what the brief says, that he'll pay it? Is there anything else that supports he had the ability to pay?
No. The probation violation reports are the only other potential source of evidence there. When we review them, and the court did take judicial notice of them, I believe at the first part of the hearing, 2 years before the actual disposition, we do see him making good faith efforts. His probation officer notes where he fails to pay that is due to his financial difficulties and the fact that I believe in at least one of the reports he'd been receiving mental health care. In fact, at the revocation proceeding where the state argues to imprison him, they note that they thought that he was, and I quote, enabled by the probation officer setting the fee schedule.
He did say, I think it was Judge Draper's question, he did say he didn't tell the judge as the process went on that he didn't have the ability to pay. Is that right? He did say periodically, you know, if you give me more time, I can or I will pay. Is that right?
Yes. He never indicated that he could not pay. However,
well, it is in the probation reports that he told his probation officer he couldn't pay and he was without funds. So he did indicate in those reports submitted to the court.
For those monthly payments, I believe.
He said he didn't
pay. Yeah. In front of the court, he always indicated, faced with incarceration, that he did need more time. However, I would note that he does actually pay off the full amount of the court costs within the term of his probation. It's only the jail board bill that remains. And I see that I've exceeded my time. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you.
May it please the court. Good morning, and I will try to cover, I think, as many questions as you guys had for this morning. I know this case does present a very important question that I think this court's guidance is needed on in Missouri. The question here that really must be addressed is, what is required for lack of good faith? What is required to demonstrate a willingness? And whose responsibility?
Do you agree, though, that there is the first question, the person has to have the ability to pay, and you only get to what is good faith, willingness to pay, if you find that they have the ability to pay?
Your Honor, I think that's actually two separate questions. In my review of Verdon, when reviewing Verdon, it talks about two contexts. One is the probationer, who certainly has the ability to pay, but completely is unwilling to do so. The other question that the court said to look at and examine in circumstances is those offenders who may not at that time have the ability to do that. But what the court then says is, what were the good faith efforts that the offender did to try to pay that? And the court was even explicit in stating two circumstances, for example, were, did the offender seek employment, and did the offender seek a loan or maybe borrow money to pay it? So it's not just in the context of...
Was there an evidentiary hearing here which his income and expenses were examined and his ability, his attempts to find jobs or training were examined?
There were, at least, to answer your question, yes. There were two hearings that were at least held in front of the judge. One was the September September 2011 hearing. And that was the hearing in which Mr. Fleming could have presented testimony at that time to dispute the violation. He didn't. He waived it.
But she never... I've read what was submitted, and I didn't see anything where the court held an evidentiary hearing on his ability to pay. That, because you have to affirmatively find an ability to pay. He's been declared indigent. She needs to find an ability to pay.
Well, Your Honor,
in order to hold him.
I think one could be drawn maybe as analogous. For instance, in trying to research this topic today, there's not as much out there specifically on this issue, I think, in Missouri. One thing that I think both counsels can agree on.
Well, the U.S. Constitution. I mean, the case.
Yes, Your Honor. Bearden certainly does provide us that guidance. But, for example, I know in the state of Missouri, underneath the provisions regarding fines, when it's a non-payment of fines, the court issues a show cause order, and the defendant then is allowed to present testimony and evidence regarding his willingness or his good faith efforts. Here, he had that opportunity as well. The defendant, however, in the 8 opportunities he had before this judge, the 8 opportunities after the sentence was imposed and the judge said, you're going to have to pay your court costs, Mr. Fleming, to which he did reply, no problem, not a problem. Those 8 opportunities, he never said, Judge, I can't pay this. We need to work something else out. Instead, he went and he affirmatively stated at the September 2011 proceeding, I mean, his attorney went and met with the judge and it was agreed on that he could afford at least $50. And that was more than what he was doing. And I think
I was looking at the violation report, and it specifically says, in response to the violation, he stated he only receives SSI and does not have the money. He said he will continue to pay $10 per month whenever he can, and it should be noted he's made some payments. I mean, he's indicated, and then he's following this payment schedule that's set by the probation officer, but he tells them in the report submitted to the court that he only lives on SSI, and he does it again in the next report.
One thing to, I guess, as a whole, the record does reflect that Mr. Fleming made some payments. The state's not disputing that some payments were made. But what the record does demonstrate is that Mr. Fleming did not consistently make those payments. And when he didn't, for example, in July of 2008, Fleming at least promised the court, I'm going to start making payments immediately. He makes nothing. He makes no payments until 9.5 months later, at which point he told his probation officer, and that's the only evidence that we do have in the record, he told his probation officer, I've been approved for SSI, I will be receiving income each month, I will also be receiving a back award, to which he said, I'm going to be willing to pay $118 a month. And Mr. Fleming did make one $118 payment, but then he didn't make any payments for several months after that. So when his probation officer issued a citation reminding Fleming, you agreed to this, this is what you said you could pay, at that time, they decided then he would start making $10 payments. But unfortunately, even then, Mr. Fleming would make payments, and then he would stop making payments. And then again, when he finally had to appear in September of 2011, he told the court, Judge, you know, don't revoke me. I mean, his attorney, obviously, there was an off-the-record discussion. So the parties here, we are limited on the record that we have in front of us. But there was an off-the-record discussion where his attorney went in front of the judge and at least convinced the judge and the parties and said, don't revoke my client. Let's give him an opportunity to create this payment plan of $50 to which he's willing to pay. So the judge has in front of it a defendant who for almost 60, the probation term is 60 months. So for 56 months, this defendant or his attorney, because there were 8 opportunities he had to go into court, 8 opportunities before that April 2013 hearing to say, Judge, I can't do this. We've got to come up with something else. And he never did.
So those are opportunities. But doesn't Bearden speak more to having a hearing to determine whether he had the ability to pay?
The
in other words, he may not have had $10 one month to pay. So doesn't Bearden actually require a hearing? Or does it just require a record?
Bearden requires some sort of inquiry to the judge. We don't disagree with that. That is explicit in the court's order. But here, we at least believe and take the position that the court had before it evidence that it could make that inquiry. Now, if Mr. Bearden wished to present additional evidence at the April 2013 hearing, he certainly could have do so. And I think under our rules, at least analogous rules, regarding non-payment of fines, or even now in the new municipal code, it talks about an inquiry to be made and the defendant having an opportunity to present evidence. Mr. Fleming chose not to present any evidence.
Let me interrupt you for a second. He can only have his probation revoked if he failed to pay. Do you agree that if by the time his probation was revoked, he had paid everything, then even if he had not paid it regularly, the court could not revoke him?
I agree. If he did not violate that.
And so by that time, he had paid all court costs as we know court costs. The only thing he hadn't paid was his jail board. You may disagree with
the I was going to say, I do disagree, and let me touch briefly on that. In fact, let me get to that right now. The board bill. This was an issue that was never raised before the circuit court. I think that there are three reasons, if not more, that this court should not address, it should reject this board bill claim. First of which is, Mr. Fleming did not present this claim to the probation court. This court has time and time again said that constitutional claims have to be raised at the first available opportunity.
It's a statutory claim. What's the authority
it's a due process
for,
claim,
what's the authority for saying that's part of court costs?
Was he his agreement to go on probation knowingly because vastly greater amounts were added in that he was required to pay that weren't contemplated?
If I understand the question, I guess it would twofold. One, multiple questions. I understand the my understanding of the argument is that it is a due process notice argument about the board bill. Therefore, the state would take the position that it is a constitutional claim that should be raised. However, another thing to note, though, is that Mr. Fleming took a contrary position in the probation court. During his April 2013 proceedings, Mr. Fleming's counsel told the court in discussing about this court cost, saying, Your Honor, we recognize this court cost. We recognize also that a large amount of this board bill is left over in context of the court costs. Mr. Fleming never alleges that he was unaware that he owed the $4,200 in court costs. He is alleging this for the first time now.
If we look at it and as a matter of law, a board bill is not court cost, does that solve the issue?
I think it would be cumbersome. And the only reason for that, Your Honor, is in examining this issue that was recently raised, I was taking a look at this court's operating Rule 21. And in operating Rule 21, this court does discuss, because court costs is defined very broadly in the statute, and if you excuse me one moment. Court costs are defined by 488.010, subsection 1, which talks about court costs as being the total fees, miscellaneous charges, and surcharges imposed in a particular case. The statute then discusses the amount for fees. It defines fees, miscellaneous charges, and surcharges, all of which are very broad. When looking at this court's Supreme Court operating Rule 21, this court discusses the amount of costs, fees, miscellaneous charges, and surcharges, and at least in the rule, for example, 21.11, which talks about an administrative plan for collection of court debt, explicitly lists collection of board bills. This court also adopted in this rule, an order on the collection schedule for schedules for disbursements, hierarchies for disbursements of fees and miscellaneous charges and surcharges, and again, in those documents also indicate board bill. So for the proposition,
what the statute says where the statute that imposes a judgment for board bills, what does it say?
The statute which talks about board bills, Your Honor,
allows the assessment of a fee for boarding in jail.
Certainly, that is 221.070, which talks about individuals who are confined to the commitment of the county jail shall bear the expense of the sport in the jail.
Did they call it court costs there?
Your Honor, it is not defined as court costs in the statute. If the answer to the question is it listed in the statute specifically that a board bill is included, it does not.
Does it have the language that says it is a judgment against the person?
It does state in there, if a person has not paid all money owed to the county jail upon release of custody, it's failed to enter into an agreement with the sheriff to make payments towards such debt according to the repayment plan, the sheriff may certify the amount of outstanding debt to the clerk of the court in which the case is determined. And it does discuss it. But if you're asking the question, has the Missouri legislature specifically defined and stated that court costs shall include a board bill, I guess the answer would only be if it falls within the broad definition of court costs in Chapter 488. And that's the only reason I point this out, is that at least seems like this court has at least interpreted as a board bill as part of the court costs. However, this court is free to further define that, and if further guidance is needed on this topic, You know, the state obviously understands that, you know, this is the case to do it in. But
we asked you two questions at once. If you address the other one, too, which you couldn't do till now, on what notice was given to the defendant at the time he pled that this board bill would be included in court costs, because she didn't say it orally and I didn't see it in the special conditions.
Correct, Your Honor. What I have read from the record, it is very slim on this. Now, my understanding is that, yes, after the court costs were sent, there is at least a document, one of the things I guess would be noticed is his meetings with the probation officer. The probation officer discussed within the 4200.
This is after the fact.
Yes, Your Honor. There's no mention of you owe a set amount of court costs at the time that those court costs were announced at the guilty plea. He pled guilty and was immediately sentenced. So there was most likely not an opportunity to tell the defendant in an itemized fashion what that is.
Well, they could have said, and that includes your board, because board fees are separately listed. But it didn't say anything about you pay your jail board fee at the hearing or in anything I saw in writing.
The judge never explicitly stated board bill.
And
she did not.
He would have been in jail at that time, so the jailer would, or sheriff would not have had certified it to the clerk by that time.
Correct, Your Honor. He was in custody at the time he was arrested until his guilty plea.
Well, the reason it isn't there, because if the judge sends him to prison, the state pays the bill.
Right.
I mean, that happens every day.
Yes, Your Honor.
There's no way to tell who will pay.
Yes, Your Honor.
The judge decides what the judge is going to do.
Yes, Your Honor. And since the adoption, I think the Rule 21, which I was talking about, each of the circuit courts adopting a plan, I did contact the court. I asked them. And even in their provisions now, they talk about the board bill being an itemized thing that is done after allocution and sentencing, and that is to determine as to what's going to happen at the time. There's really no way of knowing that. But I guess
but there's no mention of the concept of paying your board in anything I've seen in writing or orally, at least in what was submitted to us. She doesn't mention paying the board bill, and nothing in writing mentions paying the board bill.
Well, if you're asking if Judge Martinez, did she explicitly state that part of your court costs are going to be board bill at the at the July 2008. There's nothing in the record that states that she said that. However, Mr. Fleming was being supervised during this time period, and certainly if this court would allow, like I said, if the court would wish to have further briefing on this topic, I know that I did contact and call the clerk's office to ask them generally questions so that I could try to answer your questions here today. But I don't believe that the parties, or at least respondent, has had an opportunity, I think, to fully address this issue on board bill, and I think it's an important question. But for example, the board bill, it is my understanding that once the itemized receipt, which is in the record before you, that itemized receipt, I was told, was sent to the defendant, but it's also sent to the probation officer to go over. So the question of whether or not he was never aware that he owed these $4,200, and I think the question really, too, is Mr. Fleming would have at least some question. Right. If his probation officer was saying, Mr. Fleming, you owe $4,200, it would be reasonable to assume that he would have at least
about
questioned about
that. At the time of the judgment, when he agreed that he would meet the special conditions, he was not informed that this would be one of those.
He was only informed that he would have to make immediate payments on court costs and that he would need to start making payments. He was told the only amount was on the crime victim compensation fund, which was the $46 for each of the domestic violence counts he was convicted of. However,
understand later on they talked about it and he was making payments.
Yes, but I do think it is important to note, though, that Mr. Fleming did not dispute this to the probation court. I mean, this is a question of saying the probation court erred and screwed up by making me do this and waiting until habeas corpus to tell the court, you know, the probation court screwed up, I think is inherently unfair not only to the judiciary. I mean, going in, and he kept repeatedly making promises to this judge, saying, I'm going to come up with this money, I'm going to do this, and now belatedly saying, well, I shouldn't have owed it. I disregard my concession that I actually admitted to violating my conditions of probation, and now arguing to this court, well, I didn't really not abide by my conditions of probation. I think it should be barred. This court has recognized that in the forms of judicial estoppel, but also saying that you need to be asserting these for the first time, your constitutional arguments, your arguments of due process need to be asserted for the first time so that action can be taken.
Do you have any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel, was the collection agency successful in garnishing the SSI payments?
The record doesn't contain much on that. I do believe that Mr. Fleming was subject to either a lien or a garnishment on his SSI moving towards paying off the board bill in this case.
If garnishment was successful, does that go toward his good faith effort to make payments?
In this case, I think it would depend on if he had opposed the garnishment. That could show that he was not trying to make good faith efforts. However, there's nothing that shows any opposition here. And each time he's asked to make payments, he does make payments as he can, including by allowing access to his SSI.
What happened to the funds when he got his back award, when he won his appeal? What happened to those funds and how much was it?
The $1,500.
We know that immediately after the back award was paid, what's not clear on the record is how much actually arrived at Mr. Fleming. He did make the $118 payment that he promised he would make after he received the amount.
He was going to make monthly payments of that based upon a lump sum award that he was going to receive. That was his commitment, as I understood it.
I do not recall, Your Honor. I thought that one went into the $50 payment after that, but I may be misremembering the record.
Under Philpott, can the SSI benefits be garnished?
I do not know, Your Honor.
Well, in your brief, you suggest that it was.
Yes,
I was concerned about that because my understanding, and there's a lot of law that's changed since I was a real lawyer, was that it couldn't be garnished.
My understanding, based on what we have from probation counsel in this case, is that it was either garnished or a lien was placed against it, and that there was regularly money being taken against it.
What would it be if there was a lien if it couldn't be garnished? Yep.
I do not know. I based the averment on the transcript from the probation revocation final disposition where it's discussed.
Does the SSI have to be segregated not to be garnished?
I do not know, Your Honor.
Because the United States Supreme Court has said that you can't garnish Social Security benefits.
Yeah. Again, I based it on what was in the probation revocation disposition.
Your opponent's argument that your client's aspirational and hopeful offers of making payments some time ago equate to a present ability to pay. Would you address that?
Yes, Your Honor. I don't think that the fact that when faced with a choice of prison or attempting to dodge the sword of Damocles, that should constitute showing a present ability to pay.
Well, how's the court supposed to know that there isn't a present ability if the defendant or his defense counsel don't raise the present inability to pay?
I do think defense counsel should have more forcibly done so in this case. The first defense counsel doesn't raise it at all. Second defense counsel does put the court on notice of the issues in this case. However, the court refuses to listen to argument in that case due to the fact that there was the previous admission from 2 years before. At that time, he did actually still owe court costs as well, not just the jail board bill.
Well, and even the case you rely on suggests you can't, the defendant can't put themselves in an inability to pay.
Yes, if he was voluntarily avoiding it. However, in this case, Mr. Fleming would have had to deceive the SSI office, his probation officer, and the public defender's office in order for that to be willful. All the evidence points to there having been a valid finding that he was disabled, and his probation officer doesn't at any point indicate that she thinks he's trying to avoid payment. In fact, she seems to indicate reasons why that are reasonable, such as being in mental health care when he does fail to pay.
He had been found indigent. That was still applicable. Is that right?
Yes.
He was found. Defender appointed?
He was found indigent at all stages during these proceedings by the public defender office. At the time, our indigency guidelines for an individual, I believe, were between $900 and $1,200 a month. I'm trying to remember for that particular year.
Counsel, when was he revoked and remanded to corrections?
He was revoked and remanded. One sec, Your Honor. I have the date.
Oh, I'll take the year.
Yes. It would have been in, I think, 2011. He went to, 2013. Thank you.
Okay. Yes. And at that time, he could have filed a 24035, alleging that his plea was involuntary. Did he pursue a PCR?
He did. That's how I became involved in the case. However, the case law for probation revocations has consistently been that the remedy is habeas, right, not 24035, which is why we sought this remedy, Your Honor.
And then you sought a writ in the trial court?
We sought a writ at the circuit level in Cole County, then at the Western District, and then here, Your Honor.
Any other questions?
What's the court supposed to do if the party keeps saying, I can pay? I mean, don't they have to at some point say, I can't pay?
I think, yes, in general, somebody should raise that they can't pay. However, in this case, Mr. Fleming was not on notice that doing so would constitute a defense. The record in this case indicates that the prosecuting attorney wished to send him to prison for nonpayment, and that at the time, the judge could continue him onwards past the jurisdictional limit in order to make payments, even if we assume that he was also paying the board bill as well as the court costs he did pay off. I think that guidance from this court on what exactly is needed from the court and from defense counsel and what will allow somebody who's indigent to prove that they are not trying to avoid paying what they owe, they are just poor, would provide clarity and guidance to the lower court and to defendants.
Any other questions? Case will be submitted.